Okay, welcome to ITE 1, Module 7, Part 2. Before we start, we need to go over some housekeeping and general study tips. Now, I'm really sorry that I have to do this. We really shouldn't have to. We spoke about this in the first orientation class somewhat, but we've been seeing a couple problems with some labs. I know that a lot of you haven't actually studied for quite a long time, and that maybe some of the courses that you went to might have been fairly basic or didn't have very stringent requirements. Kavi operates at a university level, so we hold you guys to some really high standards, and we just need to talk about a couple of things. A lot of you, this isn't a problem for, you're doing just fine. But many of you are having some slight problems with completing some of the worksheets. We've got two things to talk about, and those are plagiarism and spelling and grammar. All right, so we've had a couple of people actually plagiarizing work, which means either copying and pasting entire websites or quotes from websites without attributing them or things like that. When you want to quote a website, you can quote up to three sentences of a website without being considered plagiarism, and you must quote the website that you have quoted, or put the link to the website that you've quoted after the question. If you don't, that's plagiarism, and that's not cool. In America, if you plagiarize once, you get a warning, and then you are expelled from the university afterwards, is my understanding. We're not that's strict at Kavi. If you plagiarize, we will tell you that you have and expect you to fix it. And if you do not fix it, then you will fail the lab. If you plagiarize three times, we have to refer you to our boss, and he will decide if you will be continuing with the courses. So it's a three strikes you're out rule. Please don't plagiarize. That also means pasting entire websites or entire blocks of websites. Now, if you put a specification a table with specifications and stuff, that's absolutely fine. No problems. That is not a problem at all. Just put the link to that page where you've gotten the specifications.
Because
No
specifications
worries.
are facts.
Yeah, that's a fact. Nobody's going to
I was just saying, I mean, usually, like, the only lab that I, well, sort of would have plagiarized on, that I know of, I actually, it asks for the name and the website link, and I usually put that, and then it would ask for the specifications of the
That's not
computer,
plagiarism.
and I would put that there. Right, of course. Yeah, that's, I just said,
That's
most
not
places,
plagiarism.
most
Now,
worksheets ask for it anyway, so.
the other thing is, guys, if you've got something and it's asked you something and you don't really understand what it is, so for example, if it's asking you what is journaling, and you look up something in Wikipedia, which I would like to say we accept, most universities will not, and you find out a definition for journaling and you diligently cut and paste that definition into your worksheet, you've got to ask yourself, what are you actually learning? Did you actually learn about journaling, or did you just lift three lines for our benefit? This course is for your benefit. I already know what journaling is. So does Grace. So does Sean. So do all the instructors. We don't need to be educated. We know all about those sorts of things. So if you don't understand something, then can I please suggest that you ask an instructor to explain it to you? That's what these guys volunteer their time for. I get paid to answer your questions. The other guys do it because they volunteer. And they are happy to answer your questions either via email or via Skype or whatever. I mean, obviously, sometimes the answers take a little bit of time to bounce backwards and forwards, as Edward will notice from the discussion list, but eventually you do get answers and insight to your problems. But your instructors are there either on email or Skype, and they are there to help you.
Another thing that is plagiarism is copying an entire website without basically formatting it. If I see things that are possibly links to other pages pasted into your Word document, that is plagiarism. Please don't do it. Please format your information. If I see drive links, things that say drivers, contact, get help, that sort of thing, That is plagiarism. Please clean up your product specs and make them presentable to us. Do not just plop a whole website or a whole part of a website into a lab and say, oh, you guys can figure it up and it's a mess, but I don't care and I'm just going to be sloppy and drop it here. Because that is not okay. And if you did that in a real work situation, you'd basically get laughed at and not given the contract and not given any more work to advise people.
One of the things I'd like to say, and this will also tie into the later topics about spelling and proofreading and stuff, is that you or someone have paid some amount of money for you to take this class. You may have gotten rehab to pay for it and go through the necessary hoops to do that, or you may have given, you know, paid your $150 or $500 or whatever. Guys, this needs to be treated like a class. You're paying money to do this. So, please don't just do sloppy work because, well, this isn't my job and this isn't, you know, and it's online. You guys are still paying for the. You guys are still paying for this. So, you know, get your money's worth out of it, and you know, doing the work may actually help you. So, you know, do it properly.
Brian, Shaw, or Moore, can you? Are you? Can you voice at all, or are you just on chat today?
I thought he left the server.
No.
Yeah. So
oh, has he?
Yeah, he's disappeared. The other thing is, guys, if for whatever reason you can't take the course, like, if this all gets too much for you and you just go, I'm done, okay, let us know. To be honest, we'll
we
be sad to see you go.
We're not going to hate you.
But yeah. We're not going to hate you.
We're not going to hate you.
We're not going to hold it against you. We're never going to not let you in again or anything. We understand that life happens. And we'll just go, cool. But honestly, if you don't let us know and you just stop showing up,
we'll wonder what happened to you.
We're gonna try and chase you down and find out what happened. And if you don't want us to chase you down, just let us know you're done.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say is... Okay, here he comes. I wanted to ask him about this. The other thing I wanted to say is if this scares you and you're like, I don't know how to do this, that's okay. You can come and talk to us and we will show you examples of how these want to be formatted. And we can even give you some help on how to... clean up and make these presentable. If you don't know how to do this, that's okay. And we don't expect you to have to know automatically how to do this. Many people do. Many people have seen this done before. But if you don't know, it's okay. You need to ask and we can find some help for you and show you how you might want we can get you example labs to show you how these things might work for you.
Grace will tell you I gave links to everything, probably more things than I needed to, but I just was like, you know what, I'd rather have it there. So you got links for everything.
Oh yeah.
And if she didn't need them, she just skipped over them.
Now before we go on to grammar and spelling, does anybody have anything that they would like to say in reply to this little discussion?
I'm just glad you don't use APA 6.
We just want a link.
We're pretty easy. Yeah. We just need a link. Yeah, we don't need MLA, APA. We don't need any of that. Because that's one of the things that people don't like about college, and we're not trying to be as scary as college can be for some people. I found that particularly irritating.
Anyone have any questions or comments?
I just want to attest to the fact that the instructors are particularly helpful. I mean, people, you know, everyone is here to help you and, you know, not to scare or, you know, belittle you. So if you do need any help with anything, I believe the saying, the only stupid question is the one not asked, holds true with everyone here. So I just encourage people to don't be scared, just ask.
I like when students call. In fact, I will turn on my iPod. I usually turn my iPod as soon as I get home, even if I'm not at the computer. So if someone needs to contact me, whether it's a student or anyone else, I can take it. I like hearing from you guys, because then I can help answer your question and chat, and usually we'll get something resolved. So I enjoy
Absolutely. I'm not up at the same time as a lot of you sometimes, but I really try to be available, and I'm on Skype quite a bit. were on more than any professors you would ever have in college. They've got a couple office hours a week, maybe 4 or 5 office hours a week. We're around quite a bit, so get a hold of us if you need help and want to know or need to know how to format something. We'll get you example labs and everything. And this is not, this does not have to be a problem, and it does not have to be scary. It's just a little bit of work and forethought and making things look good, because if you're not already, someday you will be employed and you will want to be able to do this. Okay, now the second thing we need to talk about is spelling and grammar. I've seen a lot of labs come through where they've basically not been proofread or spell checked, possibly. And sometimes your spell checker will not catch mistakes that are made on your labs. We're not the grammar police. Everybody messes up now and then. But if we see that you are not spell checking consistently, or a lab comes to us that is really bad, we will be sending it back to you and saying, could you proofread this, please? Don't feel offended. We're really just trying to get you ready for your employment or further study. So it's not a slight against you. It happens to everybody. But if we see it consistently, we are going to start sending labs back and say, look, please spell check this.
Another thing I'd like to say... Okay.
Sorry. If you're using JAWS and Word, Alt-Shift-L is your friend, because rather than cycling through all the errors at once, it will give you a list of them, and then you can
cool.
go down the list and leave the ones that are okay.
I hate doing it that way.
That is awesome.
Well, because my name is, of course, never in the spell check, if I have my name in there once, or if I haven't added it to the dictionary yet and I have it in there more than once, then I can just ignore the ones that need to be ignored and fix the ones that need to be fixed. That's what I usually do. It's a little less painstaking, but also, if you don't have Microsoft Word...
Windowise is Control-Shift apostrophe and Control-Shift semicolon, I believe, but you'll need to check your voluminous documentations.
Yes. Also, if you're not using Microsoft Word, HJPad, which comes with JAWS, has a built-in spell checker. I don't know if it does doc files, but I think that it does what WordPad does, so I believe it would. So yes, if you use something more creative to do your doc files, because like I was at one point, you can't handle a blank, blank, blank that sometimes occurs in some versions of Word, you can use the HJPad, that does have a decent spell checker. Or if you have Kurzweil 1000, that does as well. I use that
and
to
there are
complete a few college assignments.
Yeah, there are solutions that you can use. Make sure you're familiar with how to... The other thing, and this sounds really simple, but read through your answers right before you submit the lab. Some of the things I see are just tiny little typos that if you just listen to it, you'll catch them. And some of them are mistakes that, you know, that I make and everybody makes. Just listen to your stuff and make sure it sounds right. That's also important. You know, read your work. Make sure it, you know, sounds like it, like you mean what you think you do.
Absolutely, because I'll look through labs and I'll see something silly and I'll be like, oh, I know you didn't mean that. I know what you mean, but it's on paper and for validation. I have to fail you on this lab and be like, do you want to resubmit this? And, you know, it's just basically for paper. I know what you meant, but if somebody were to audit me, they don't know that I know what you meant. Brian Moore, are you on... Do you have audio?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, you do? Okay. I had a question for you, because we're talking about formatting of stuff. If you got a quote from somebody at your work, or sent in a quote, to somebody at your work, and you had all the links of the website there, and it was basically a mess to read with JAWS, what would you think of that person as a possible person that you want to buy a computer from? Because we're getting a lot of that, and you actually work, so we wanted to know your take on
it. If someone sends me a quote and I have to fight to read it, the guy whose quote is easy to read is far more likely to be successful. It also makes me think, I wonder if they want my business, if they're not prepared to put the effort to make a good initial impression. And the same goes the other way. Like, if we send out, as we did, few points. Send out quotes converted to PDFs that were terrible with screen readers because they didn't use tables properly. I said, I wouldn't buy from this company.
So guys, it's really important to try to format your specification tables and information in an easy-to-read format and take out all those extraneous links, because you will have to do that in your employment life.
I saw a website for someone who, and I'm not going to mention who they are, who was providing access training by phone, and there were quite a few typos in the site. And I thought, you know, can't even take the time to make sure that their website is spelled correctly, then I don't think I want training from them. And it's not a, you know, they may be the most wonderful trainer ever, but the fact that that's not spelled right immediately questions in my mind the credibility of this person. So, you know, it is important.
We actually, when we first had QCAT.org go up, it was actually the original website design was done by somebody with dyslexia. And we spent the first 3 weeks, and, you know, he told us to, mailing him in all the spelling errors so it could be tidied up, because, gee, it looked a bit dicey otherwise.
And I'm one for it. I mean, I hate sort of spending time formatting things and making junk line up, and I'm also not phenomenal at it. I'm okay, but I hate doing it. But this stuff is really important, and it makes an impression, so you pretty much have to.
Your audio is doing interesting breaky things.
He's on 3G something, but he's doing just...
Oh, you're on 3G.
You're hearable.
Yeah, we can understand it. It just sounds a bit funny. It's not quite what we're used to.
He's not home. He's traveling.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Any questions on any of that? Formatting issues? Any of that? If you don't want to ask now, you can ask later, and that's fine. But if you do have questions that you want answered, go ahead and ask now. We'll be happy to answer.
Just one thing I was going to add very quickly is, and you can email as well, these labs become an excellent reference to you after you finish the course. So if you did all this work in Chapter 12 on Windows unattended installation, just because I happen to know that's a hot topic, and you go and you research it all out and you fill in this lab, put the links into all the stuff you found so that when you go back and look at that lab next year, because you still need the information, it'll all be sitting there waiting for you.
I had a fun time with a lab because I'd just gotten my iPod, and for troubleshooting resources, I just found all kinds of cool iPod stuff, and I thought, you know, I better keep this lab if I ever need these websites again. So yeah, they can be really helpful.
Questions?
We are sorry we have to rouse, guys, but we are actually accountable to our boss, and believe me, if our boss catches us not coming down on you guys for plagiarism and stuff, we will be in trouble. So good old trickle down theory.
Yeah, we'll be in a lot more trouble than you guys for the actual plagiarism. Trust us. Okay, on to lecture. Sorry that took so long.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, kind of needed to happen. Okay, I am talking about, I don't want to use the royal we. Well, today we're talking about, I'll just do it anyway, printers and scanners. And this is part two from where we left off last time. And last time, right as we were concluding, we were talking about adding memory to a printer. Does anyone have any questions on anything we may have covered last week that people found confusing, or do you even remember last week?
I think I had to run away having some roommate issues, but I don't know, I probably didn't mention the example of the people that went to test photocopiers, because business printers have hard drives, business photocopiers have hard drives, and they keep caches of every picture they make. So when some people went to a warehouse, they grabbed 4 photocopies at random and found out from the information on the hard drives that one was from a police station and 2 were from hospitals. And they got interrogation transcripts and patient charts and abuse reports and photographs and lots of interesting things, because no one knew how to delete the information off the hard drive.
Makes you wonder how many people got pictures of other people sitting on their photocopier. I'm sure there would have been a fair few of those too.
Yeah, that is. I'd forgotten about that story, so I'm glad you brought that up. That is an awesome, but also slightly scary, story.
I think it's very scary. I guess the lesson there would be thread your hard drives when you finish with them.
Or erase them. I mean, the
And
fact
they
is that
probably
if you're
didn't realize they had a hard drive in. They
if you've
probably
got a
didn't even know.
multiprocessing document center like a, Kyocera, whatever, with all these paper trays and everything, it's going to have to store the print jobs somewhere, and those print jobs are going to be stored on a hard drive, just due to the volume and size of them. So make sure that when you get rid of these copies or whatever, that you blank out what's on the hard drives.
All right, wiki wiki bro sense, come on. Well, I'm sorry, did someone have something?
I was just going to ask, where would you find, where would you find that to wipe those out? You could find that on off of like a workstation or something where you could access that hard drive from there, like just like you would an external drive or that type of a thing?
Depends on the
Probably
printer.
opened it up and
Consulted
pulled it out.
documentation. You would have to. No. A lot of them have a remote, well, like web interface that you can go and reinitialize to factory defaults and stuff to actually clear the drives off. You'd need to consult the documentation for the multifunction device.
Oh, I was saying that's probably how the people got the information out of the copiers. They probably just opened the thing up and took the drive out. But yeah, that's not how you'd fix it.
And this is, of course, mostly for business ones. I don't believe that home machines do this, but yeah,
No, I'd
as far
highly
as I know,
doubt
it's
it.
just for business.
Okay, we're going to talk about adding printer memory. Adding memory to a printer can improve printing speed and allow the printer to handle more complex print jobs. So this is an area of memory that stores the print job until the printer can actually get to it. All printers have at least some amount of memory inside. Generally, the more memory a printer has, the more efficiently it operates. Consult the printer documentation for memory requirements. These are things like memory specifications. Some printer manufacturers use standard types of memory, and other manufacturers use proprietary memory. Check the documentation for the type of memory, the speed of the memory, and the capacity of memory. Memory population and availability. Some printers have multiple memory slots. To find out how many memory slots are used and how many are available, you might need to open a compartment on the printer to check memory population. Upgrade printer memory steps. 1. Turn off the printer. 2. Disconnect all cables. 3. Open the memory compartment. 4. Replace memory modules or add new modules. 5. Close the memory compartment. 6. Reconnect all cables. 7. Power on the printer. 8. Run a self-test. And 9. Print a test page. Each printer might have different configuration and default options. Check the printer documentation for information about configurations and default settings. Here are some common configurations that are available for printers. Paper type, standard draft, gloss, or photo paper. Print quality, draft, normal, photo, or automatic. Color printing, multiple colors are used. Black and white printing, only black ink used. Grayscale printing, color images are printed using only black ink in different shades of gray, usually. Paper size. Standard paper sizes or envelopes and business cards. And some of these higher-end printers will do legal size and stuff, so you're going to have options for that. Excuse me. Paper orientation, landscape or portrait. Print layout, normal, banner, booklet, or poster. Duplex. Normal or two-sided printing. That's actually kind of cool. You can get a printer to print on two sides. Either you may have to manually flip the pages and print the odd pages first and then the evens, or some of them actually will do it automatically, the higher end ones. Paper type, going back to that, this may be particularly important for laser printers. The documentation for my printer actually says to be
Although, just a
careful
comment
and
on
set
that can
paper type.
cause jams and things.
Which can?
What, the wrong paper? Yeah.
Yeah, it
And also,
actually
it can.
could, yeah.
Sorry,
It
no,
can also.
the reverse printing thing.
It shouldn't.
If the
Printers
printer
that
is
are
well
actually
designed.
designed, the printers that are actually designed to do duplex shouldn't jam. If you're doing the I'm going to print 20 pages on one side and then flip the other stuff over and print it on the other side, you should know two things. One, you will eventually kill your drum. Two, yes, that can cause jams because the paper has already been curled by the heat of the toner drum.
You know, this one was meant to do it. It just didn't... It tried. It just didn't do it very well.
Some... You get that with
okay,
every printer, though.
Printers that
there's
are designed
some
to do it well, yeah. Talking about paper type, the documentation for the laser that I have here basically says to make sure that you change the paper type, because if you try and print on plastic without telling the printer that you're printing on plastic, it may melt things. I have always tried to encourage... My dad tends to print labels, and I try to encourage him to make sure and change that that setting, just because I don't want to have that happen. And they may be exaggerating a little bit, but probably not a great idea. Tell the printer you're going to print on stuff that might melt. Printer optimization...
Not only that, there's always times where things can be, say, ink... might be different on one side type of paper than the other, and Lord, that's a mess.
That can
yeah,
happen.
That's true. The wrong type of paper would affect how the ink is put on the paper. Also, if you're thicker paper, you probably also need to tell the printer if you're printing on cardstock, so it can use a little bit more force, I guess, when feeding the paper through. But yeah, these are important things. Make sure you're using what the people that make the printer say you should be using.
Also, if you are moving countries, say for example going from Australia to the US or vice versa, we use A4 paper, the US uses letter. One of the things your regional setting will do, as Grace found out the hard way, was tell it that it was using letter, so the laser printer was sitting there going UC load letter. Once we switched her over to Australian, it all dropped back to A4 and everybody was happy.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and... Carrie was pointing out that if you just go with a typical Windows install, it can be a real pain to get Windows to realize that you're in Australia and you need different paper settings. We talked about that, I think last term it was, or we talked about that one of the times.
I never knew there was a difference.
Oh, there is.
Yeah, there is, actually.
Letter is 8.5 by 11.5, and A4 is 210 by 297 millimeters, and they are not compatible measures.
No. And it folds interestingly, too. I think that's one of the...
Definitely good to know. Thank you.
All right. Most printer optimization is done in the software that comes with the driver, with the drivers, which can include tools to optimize performance. So now that we've got the printer working, we're going to fine-tune it and make it work a little bit better. Common examples of these are the following. Print spool settings. These allow you to cancel or pause current print jobs in the printer queue. Color calibration. Adjust settings to match the colors on the screen to the colors on the printed sheet. I've actually watched sighted people go through that. Oh, no, that was cartridge alignment, I'm sorry. Another one, paper orientation, select landscape or portrait image layout. This is mentioned again, and I guess this could be a performance issue, because I think if you set it wrong, then you're going to, one, you're going to, if you're trying to print a spreadsheet on portrait, you're going to use a lot of paper, and it's not going to work very well, and I don't think the printer is going to be too happy about that. So actually... I think the orientation is an optimization. I wasn't sure about this at the time I put these together, but I think it makes more sense now to me. Certainly Cisco considers that a performance optimization if you're asked about it on a test. Now we're going to talk about how to print test pages. Some of us have probably done this before. After installing a printer, you should print a test page to verify that the printer is operating properly. The test page confirms that the driver software is installed and working correctly, and that the printer and computer are communicating. After installing a printer, you should print a test page to verify that the printer is operating properly. Okay. In Windows XP, to manually print a test page, we're going to go to the Start menu, Printers and Faxes, to display the Printers and Faxes menu. To manually print a test page in Windows Vista, use the following path. Start printers to display the printers and faxes menu. In the printers and faxes menu, right-click the desired printer and follow this path. Properties, General tab, and Print Test Page. A dialog box opens asking if the print page printed correctly. If the page did not print, built-in help files assist in you in troubleshooting the problem. I'm going to put some quotes around that because I don't know if they're always helpful. You can also test a printer by printing a test page from an application such as Notepad or WordPad. And Notepad can be found under Start, All Programs, Accessories, and then Notepad. And that's in all of the operating systems, Vista XP and 7. And you could also use the Start search box. Type some text into the document, then print it using the print option on the file menu. So make sure that you print from a variety of applications, just to make sure. Sometimes Word, particularly, will have different ideas on how a printer should be set up, especially if you haven't told the operating system that it is the default printer. I don't remember if we cover that, but basically the way you do that is you right-click the printer you want and hit Set as Default Printer, or it's also in the properties. I don't know if we cover that, but if we didn't, there it is.
Just most a gotcha. Printers are gonna have if you a, set a default yep. printer, if as I was gonna say, if you set a default printer that is a network printer, your netbook/portable computer will be very unhappy when you take it off network, and every time you go to print something, it will try and enumerate the printers and hang there for a minute or two trying to find your default printer, which is no longer available.
Yeah, you got
to
be aware of that.
That's good to know. Most printers have a front panel with controls to allow you to generate test pages and do other stuff. This method of printing enables you to verify the printer operation separately from the network or computer. That test page might also include important information, such as how much has been printed that you might need for technical reasons if you work with the manufacturer. You're going to consult the printer manufacturer's website or documentation to learn how to print a test page from the front panel of the printer. Sometimes that can be pretty tricky on some of these. So you might have to have a Google if you're not sure. You can also print from the command line to test the printer. Not as many computers are going to be able to do this in printers, but it can still be useful. So this is mainly going to apply to parallel printers. You can get USB printers to emulate other ports, I believe. Printing from the command line is limited to ASCII files only, such as .txt and .bat files. To send a file to the printer from the command line in Windows XP, you're going to use Start Run and type in CMD. In Windows Vista, you're going to do Start Search and type in CMD, and then press Enter or click OK. When you get to the command prompt, you're going to enter the following command: print space the file.txt, and that should print your file for you. Now we're going to talk about how to share a printer. Printer sharing enables multiple users or clients to access a printer that they are not directly connected to. This is helpful because not every computer on the network will need its own printer attached to it. This is accomplished by having other client computers connect to the computer with the shared printer and having it print the document for them. Setting up printer sharing is simple with Windows XP and Windows Vista, and Windows 7, I guess, too. The following steps enable a computer to share a printer. In XP, click Start Printers and Faxes. In Windows Vista, go to Start Control Panel Printers. Right-click the printer and choose Properties. Select the Share tab. Click the Share This Printer Radio button. Keep or change the share name, and click Apply. And I believe in Windows 7, you're going to go to Start, and I think it's called Devices and Printers. I forget exactly what it's called, and it doesn't seem to say in here. Okay.
That does look right, but I'm currently having trouble with it.
I just got a Windows 7 netbook Sunday, and I'm still struggling. with where things are.
It's view devices and print.
Okay.
Okay, so where the heck's the other
one? Which one?
It doesn't look like you're used to. Trust me. It's a completely different dialogue. And you go into view devices and printers, and it's like nothing you ever saw. And there they are. Typing print into the search box gets you something useful, though, if I remember correctly.
It probably does. You're going to love that. That search box, if you know exactly what to type in, is really nice. All of the computers that use the shared printer must have the correct drivers installed. This is important. Drivers for other operating systems can be installed on the print server. To connect to the printer from another computer on the network in Windows XP, choose Start, Printers and Faxes, and then click Add Printer. In Windows Vista, choose Start, Control Panel, Printers, Add Printer. The Add Printer wizard appears, and that will appear in XP too. Follow the steps using the wizard. This wizard allows you to browse to the computer with the printer on it and select the printer. Additionally, the wizard may offer to copy the driver from the computer with the printer over for you. If you know that the OS on both computers is the same and are confident about the security of the sharing computer, you can use this option if you wish. However, it is not guaranteed to work, and if the OS does not match, then doing this is a very bad idea. I got lucky and had this work between several XP machines, but my dad caused some problems because he allowed the XP driver accidentally to be copied to a Vista computer, and that wasn't fun to sort out. I think we ended up doing a system restore, and that fixed that. You also need to be careful that if you have a 64-bit driver, a 64-bit OS, you get 64-bit drivers, and if you have a 32-bit OS, you get 32-bit drivers, and we may have touched on this last week, but that's a general rule for device drivers, because 32-bit drivers are not going to work on 64-bit, which is unfortunate, because it's one of those things that you want to work. Okay, we are going to move on to scanners. Before we do, does anyone have any questions on printer stuff we've already talked about? And of course, we can always go back to printers if you have a question that you think of later. But
One quick question. Does that work for wireless networks as well?
You can... Well, there's two things. You can share a printer on the network and have a wireless computer access it. It's probably a better idea that the computer with the attached printer be on wired connection. There are also printers with Wi-Fi. My understanding of these is that these can be a royal pain to configure, and it's easier if you can. Yeah, they can, but they also can not work somewhat spectacularly. And so if it doesn't, you might be better off if you've got multiple computers to use one as the, I guess, sort of ghetto print server, and then have the other computers print to it.
I actually spoke to a friend about this, and their answer was, you know what? Reading the book helps, and while some of them can be difficult to be configured, you'd be surprised at how many people actually pull a printer out of the box and try and configure it without once looking at any of those pesky instruction manuals that are blocking your access to the new printer. So whilst they can be a challenge to configure, it does actually pay to read the manuals and things, especially if you've got a wireless printer and you want that wireless functionality. Some of them, the problem with having them connected to a server, and I agree with Sean that that's simpler, but if the computer is connected to a computer, that machine must be on before anybody can print. And that also has to be remembered. Oh, my point was, if you're using a wireless printing system and you do decide to take Sean's advice and connect it to a computer, which is a good idea because it may make it more reachable and available, that you'd better have that computer turned on when you'd like to print.
Yes, that is the downside to having a printer shared with a print server or anything like that. You need to make sure that computer is on. This computer that is acting in here as the print server for our laser printer is on a good amount of the time for that reason. It also happens that because I trust my family, most of them, They know the password in case it needs to not be on and they need to get back on and print stuff. That's something that, you know, if you want to share that password, that's up to you.
I got a question.
Fire away.
I actually have an Epson CX4600 here at my house, and it's connected to another printer, but another computer. But anyway, what I ended up having to do before I shared the printer, because the computer it's connected to is running XP Media Center, I believe, but when I looked on the website, the drivers were still the same. But my question being, is it a safe idea to go ahead and get the drivers and install them before you share the printer, just in case the drivers aren't there to be copied?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to get the printer working successfully on the computer attached to it before you go trying to share it. Because if it doesn't, and the client computer say, hey, print my stuff, and the computer's like, no, I can't do that because my driver's messed up, and why are you telling me to do that? It's not going to work. So yeah, you got to get it set up and working locally first, and then you share.
Also, having the printer drivers on hand will allow you to repair problems if and when the automatic driver copy blows up. So have the drivers before you get started. It's being prepared.
I actually need to see if my current printer has Windows 7 drivers. I suspect not. And that will be slightly sad for my netbook, but it might be better since the netbook is mobile, even more than my old laptop. I'm sorry, am I cutting out?
No, you're not, but you are very quiet.
Okay. Oh, I can fix that.
Oh, good.
I think I can fix that. Let's see. How is this? Is that better?
Oh, that's better. Yes.
Do you want more?
No.
No,
okay,
that's good.
Cool. This is at 44. Alright. At one point, this microphone had an auto gain control, and I turned it off for something else, and I forgot to put the microphone back up.
Whatever. Alright,
shall we move on?
Really good.
It sounds good on Ventrilo. It doesn't sound very good when I record with Reaper or other programs, though. It's just a crappy Radio Shack thing or whatever.
Well, the reason is, but this is the USB one. That's because you're sampling at the wrong sample rate. You need to be at the correct sample rate, otherwise sample rate conversion comes into place.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll play in there and see if I can. Yeah, we'll see.
We can talk about that after lecture, but there is actually a
utility we'll do that.
That will allow you to dump the contents of your sound card and tell you what sample rate it should be running at, and then you record at the same sample rate and resample with Reaper if you need to. Okay, back to printers.
Cool. All right. We going to move on to scanners then?
Can I just make a comment? Sorry about the train.
That's all right.
That's
keep
all right. Used to be.
Okay, that's good. It's just that I could barely hear you, so I thought it would be bad. About the view devices and printers thing, when you go to the list, you'll come to a thing saying devices and printers expanded, and you'll only be able to see one thing, which is usually something called a fax. You have to use right and left arrow, which is very odd, but that's something I've just discovered, which I thought might interest people.
I've noticed that in Windows 7, you have to use more times when you need to use all of your arrow keys, and we've gotten used to just up, down in XP, and I'm noticing that sometimes if I use an arrow key that I normally wouldn't think work, then stuff magically becomes available. I'm like, oh, I'm glad, I wish I'd have thought of that before.
So just remember that unlike my moods, which are usually up and down, Windows 7 also needs side to side.
Nice.
There you go, classic.
Yep, I won't forget that in a hurry then. Okay, here we go. The wonderful world of scanners. As a blind or visually impaired user, you're doubtless familiar with scanners and how they can help us using OCR. However, we also need to know how to select one for a customer or ourselves, install and configure a scanner, and troubleshoot problems with them. There are different types of scanners out there, and we're going to talk about them. First, we need to know what a scanner does. Scanners convert a paper document into an electronic image or text using OCR that a computer can treat as a file and work with just as it does with any other file. You can store, edit, or email the saved files resulting from a scan. Though most scanners perform the basic task of scanning a page or image, there are different types of scanners available that may accomplish this in different ways. As with printers, the features, quality, and speed of the different types of scanners vary. Scanners typically create a RGB image that can be converted into common image formats such as JPEG, TIFF, BMP, and PNG. BMP is bitmap, and PNG is portable network graphic image, just because I want to demystify those acronyms for you. An RGB image has three channels, red, green, and blue. We've talked about this a little bit, but they bring it up again. RGB channels generally follow the color receptors of the human eye and are used in computer displays and image scanners. Some scanners have the ability to create text documents using optical character recognition or OCR software. OCR software converts a scanned printed page into text that can be edited with a word processor. For us, there are two approaches to this process that are unique for blind and visually impaired and all that. There are blindness-related programs specifically, like Kurzweil 1000 and 3000 and OpenBook, and off-the-shelf products like Abbey FineReader and OmniPage. There used to be TextBridge, which my transcriber really liked and nobody else seemed to use, but he really enjoyed that one, and now it's gone.
I own it.
That's really good.
DocuScan Plus.
I think they've got Abby in.
Yes, I can't wait to try that one.
You're right. I'm sorry,
isn't there also DocuScan Plus for the eye annoyance?
I think there is.
They just released as of Monday, I think. Monday or Friday?
No, it was about a week.
They just released, something like that. So I think it was like Friday or Thursday or something. Anyway, it just released the Mac version. And it's fully accessible, fully ready.
Mac App Store.
Mm-hmm. So, ready to go.
That's not Doc Scanner on the eye thing, is it?
No.
I have that. I haven't played with that.
Totally different. DocuScan Plus is a fully inclusive. It does PDF, pretty much everything, really. It can convert all kinds of fun stuff. And with a scanner up to it,
can we just summarize by saying that it makes Mac users happy when it comes to OCR and move on? Because we all know what Mac users have wanted from their OCR for the last 5 years. You've now got it with DocuScan Plus. Full stop.
Amen. If anyone plays with it and wants to talk about it off lecture and talk about how it works, that'd be good. I wonder if my scanner will work with my Mac, but I'll figure that out later. The blindness ones that are mentioned are usually much more expensive than the off-the-shelf products because they're not produced in mass. And they also have some unique features like allowing you to read and scan at the same time. You can just have a book and just let it go. Sighted people aren't needing to do that. So it depends on how much complexity and money you have and what kind of experience you want. And that's all I'm going to say. I don't want to go on which is better and stuff. We've discussed this on the list, and it's probably it is going to be available in the archives if you look for it. So we've talked about this quite a bit. The resolution of a scanner is measured in, guess what, dots per inch, or DPI. That's whenever we talk about resolution and visual things, it's DPI is usually what we're talking about. On monitors it's not. Anyway, when we're talking about printers and scanners, resolution is dots per inch, DPI. Like printers, the higher the DPI, the better the quality of the image is going to be. As with printers, you have an interface on the scanner and computer that you can connect them together so that you can connect them together and use them. The interface needs to be the same on the computer and the scanner. The interfaces for scanners are typically the same as the ones for printers that we've talked about earlier, FireWire, USB, Parallel in some cases, SCSI in some cases, and so on.
Does anyone
know what an all-in-one device is?
I was just about to say, oh, does anybody remember those horrible parallel scanners like the Plustek 4800 that everybody the Plustek, and people were so happy with them, and you'd put them on a standard printer port, and they'd go...
Yep. When you put it on EPP or ECP, it would...
But even when you put it on ECP,
work much better.
Yeah, and it would still take 30 seconds to a minute to scan a page. It was insanely slow. And these people clung to these things. And then when Windows 98 was like old hat and we all upgraded, and they all were very sad because there were no drivers for their parallel port scanners, and I told them to build a bridge and get over it.
Scanners still.
They still work.
We'll show you some interesting things that someone's done with one of those in a bit.
Yeah,
okay.
One of those HP 2200C scanners. Flatbed.
Cool.
Had it for ages. It's never given up on me. Paid about $70 for it. It's still got some of the best accuracy.
Wow, you got lucky. Okay, does anyone want to define an all-in-one device for me? What's an all-in-one?
Printer, scanner, fax machine.
Absolutely.
Or just printer, scanner, copier. Yeah, copier. Device that does more than one thing.
Yep, that's
something
right.
Something I'll never have, that's for sure.
Some of them work well.
Some of them are alright. But you don't know.
They do,
The only reason I have one is because there's
a nice cubby in my desk for it. But the only trouble is, they're not laser, so the ink dries out after a while. You've really got to watch that, unless you can find the laser one.
There are some laser all-in-ones, but they're harder to find. Some of them are quite horrible, some of them are actually good.
The one we have at work is a laser, and the first time I ever seen it, I looked at that thing and said, what the hell is that? It's a big, huge monstrosity sitting on the desk. I'm like, what the heck is that?
Okay, dokie. So, as we just talked about, all-in-ones combine multiple devices and different functionality with different functionality into the same unit. They usually have the ability to print, scan, copy, and fax documents. Not all of them can fax, but quite a few of them can. According to the text, some also may have media card readers or hard drives for storage. I've never seen one with these, but well, the all-in-ones that Aiden's talking about, they might have hard drives in them. Probably the one that your work, Ryan, would have one, possibly. It would make sense for one of these to have a media reader because you could print photos off of your camera. I've never seen one, but I don't doubt that they're out there. I've just never seen one.
Some of the codecs.
Any of you guys seen one?
Those.
That makes sense.
Card readers.
Yeah, I've got a. What is it? It's a photo, basically a photo printer, and does scan copy or scan. I think it'll do copy as well, and it's got the media card reader in it. Although I've never used it.
That's cool. All-in-one devices are typically... Yep.
What's that thing called? Dock technology or something. You can plug the camera into the printer, and they can take cards and cameras and stuff, and it's allowing you to print stuff off without using the computer. Sometimes not very accessibly, but there you have it. Picked bridge.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm happy now.
Okay. All-in-one devices are typically used in... home offices, in home office environments, or where space is limited, like in Aiden's desk. These devices are often used with a computer, but can operate alone to copy and fax documents, or possibly, as Carrie's described and you guys have said, print pictures. These devices have advantages in that all of the devices are in one unit. Print, scan, copy, fax. They are low cost. They are easy to upgrade, since software will work with all of the devices, not necessarily the case, because it may not allow you to fax on your computer just might not support the faxing bit. That's the theory anyway. So if they ask you on the test, that's one of the advantage. And connection is easy because there's only one port to deal with. So those are some advantages. Some of the disadvantages of these devices are that they are not modular, so if one component or device breaks, the other devices may not work properly. or they may not be operational, and they're not designed for heavy use. I don't know, I've seen some fairly slow scanners on these all-in-ones that are may not be adequate for OCR, extensive OCR, but I could be proved wrong. And sometimes they're a bit small, too. I'm just looking at what I've written here. Sometimes it can be hard to get a book on one of these because the scanner may only be
kind of a weird design.
Letter mm-hmm. size or much, or not much bigger than that.
There's no automatic document feeders on a lot of them either, so you can't you can't use that to tear a book, unbind one, and pop it in there that way either.
If you're serious about OCR, I would recommend getting a separate good quality scanner, good flatbed scanner, and a printer to go along with it. Brian, you had something.
Yeah, you basically already said it. If you're using any, particularly the blindness OCR thing, you really don't want an all-in-one. They have an amazing high failure rate. You know, trying to use the train interfaces to sort of run as well, flash open, flash any of those other things. Particularly APs really don't work for OCR, except if you use their interface, which is god-awful and not very accessible.
They actually have, I saw a Canon, and this is something I didn't think to mention last time I gave this lecture, I saw a Canon sheet feed-only scanner that could do something like 90 pages in an hour. It was the most amazing thing ever. It was just boom! Boom, one after the other. I was like, oh my god, that is so cool.
The other thing is,
that'd
you can't
be great
be assured,
for doing a book
you can't be assured how good the scanner and stuff is going to be on the multifunction, and often the Twain drivers and stuff for the multifunction, if there's any interaction that's required to pick the scanner or whatever, you can forget using that with Kurzweil book, just to cover both of them. You basically need to be very careful with multifunctions, and just because you don't have a lot of space, really think carefully before you empty your hard-earned cash into one of those things, because you may have problems. The other thing is, some of them have got things that obscure the scanner and stuff, so you can't put big books and stuff on them. Some of them aren't very well designed. The newer ones are okay, but I remember that being a problem with the old ones. You couldn't open them all the way up.
Sometimes it pays to, if you can do it, if your eyes don't, you know, complain about the light, if you can't see it, sometimes it pays to scan a book with your scanner lid all the way up. That way, if you need to press down on the binding, you can do that. That's something I was taught, and that can be helpful.
Also, and I say this to my significant other on a regular basis, it may not matter to you, but it matters to the OCR software that you line your pages up with the edges of the scanner, because 2 or 3 degrees of skew will give you much worse recognition results, which is why she scans, I line them up.
Yeah, that can be
tricky.
Yeah, I
found a
lot
of times
I'm fairly good at that.
Double people scanning a 450-page book. It does help when you have somebody scanning the pages and you lining them up, even if you have it set on auto scan, which I don't recommend unless you're a very fast page turner.
It's nice to try to line up a corner. I know every time I scan something, I try to line it up so that a corner is actually lined up against the scanner's corner. That way you've got two signs lined up and it won't skew.
So if your program says, if you're using one of these ones, you'll want it to consistently say the top of the page is at the back of the scanner, or pages right side up, or whatever, try to make it always say that, because they can tell what orientation it is, and they'll try to correct it, but they may not always do it properly. Now we're going to talk about flatbed scanners. Okay. Flatbed scanners are often used to scan books and photographs for archiving. An electronic image is acquired by placing the book or photograph face down on the glass. The scanner head, consisting of an array of image sensors, lies beneath the glass and moves along the item, capturing the image. Sheet feeders can be used with flatbed scanners to scan multiple images. A sheet feeder is a device that can be attached to some flatbed scanners to hold multiple sheets and feed them into the scanner one at a time. This feature allows for faster scanning, however, the image quality is usually not as good as a flatbed scanner that doesn't use a sheet feeder, or if you just don't use the sheet feeder. Part of that is you have the weight of the scanner lid pressing down, and that will help with the scan quality, whereas if you're just using the sheet feeder, you won't have that extra flattening of the page if that's what you need. But if you're really in a hurry or it's a book you have ripped apart, then scanning it is going to be, with a sheet feeder, might be the quickest way. Since we've talked about, should I play my sound now, Carrie, since we've talked about flatbed scanners, or should I? Okay. While I am getting this queued up, Carrie, why don't you explain a little bit about how this was done?
Okay, basically a number of years ago, it was discovered that while scanning various documents, various pitches could be made by the different speeds and resolutions at which the scanner travels its head backwards and forwards from one end of the scan platen to the other. And an enterprising programmer has put this to use on an HP 5P, and this actually has video, so you can see the light going backwards and forwards if you're watching the video, and you will hear what he managed to do with his HP 5P. Don't do this to yours.
If I can
wear it out, if you can get it to work.
If I can get it to play, hang on just a second. I need to switch off of auto. Okay. Are we going?
Yep.
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 Holy cow.
That's pretty cool.
Oh my god.
That's impressive.
Now that is very impressive.
That is just, do not do this to your scanner because it might not like it afterwards.
Would that have been done all at once, or was that done like, or was each one a different, do you know what I mean?
No, all at once. Because if you listen at the end, it goes, so in other words, that was one program that actually ran the whole scanning traversal.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I
imagine
see how
that
it would be possible to set that up.
Well, you just change the resolution they were changing, because if you've ever used a flatbed scanner, you'll notice that when you change the, I noticed with mine, when I changed the DPI from 200 to 300 to 400 to 600, the pitch gets lower and it takes longer to go backwards and forwards. So I imagine if you do that quickly enough and change, you know, brightness and all kinds of other settings, that's how they got it to do what they want. And some scanners actually had an Easter egg built in where they could do that, or Ode to Joy, I know some of them would do if you did just the right things to them. But the Furalese is much cooler.
Yeah, it's got a lot more intricate note patterns in it.
Yes.
I always think they should. It's too bad. I almost feel disappointed that they don't get to the fast bit that comes next. But
I think it would have broken by that point. If they would have made it do that, it would have been. It probably didn't have much life after that.
Sadly, I was just listening, and there's one note wrong in there, and I'm just like, no, I couldn't have released.
There is one note wrong.
It's like, no, that can't go out. It must not see the light of day.
We had a scanner at school, and we had a scanner at school, and I used to go in tune to it, and it made some of the kids laugh when it would happen during study hall, but it was quite amusing. I'd actually try and match the pitch of it. Okie
dokie. Yeah, those Epson scanners used to do that a lot.
Some of the Canon ones were loud too. My Epson is really loud too. It's really painful on Skype, I'm told.
It's actually something you need to watch out for. You are going to go on to drum scanners in a second, but my final comment on scanners is, if you can, make sure that you get to hear
the
scanner scanning at the... Oh, okay. If you get a chance, actually see if you can hear the scanner scanning at the resolutions that you want it to scan at, because the scanner we've got at home, it's okay. Like, it's a pretty good scanner. The older scanner that we had, that was an Epson 1640 or whatever, when it was scanning at
Quercetin,
it made this ear-splitting howl at 300 dots per inch, and you're just like, I don't want to scan
that. That's
what
this is a 1640.
It hurts my ears.
I had it in the library once, and I had to scan this assignment because my teacher didn't have any other way to do it, and I was apologizing to the people in this. It wasn't actually, it was a room off the library that you could rent for meetings and stuff. And I had to apologize to them because it was just that bad. Sometimes dynamic thresholding can change the sound of a scanner too, so be aware of that. We're going to go a little bit more low-tech in a way. We're going to talk about handheld scanners. A handheld scanner is small and portable. It is difficult to smoothly scan an image using a handheld scanner. This is probably really true for blind people, because moving it in a straight line might be a bit of a problem. To scan an item, carefully pass the scanner head across the item with which you want to scan, or that you want to scan. As with a flatbed scanner, digital images are made from the images collected by the handheld scanner. So there's sensors and stuff in there. When you want to scan an item larger than the head of the handheld scanner, you must make more than one pass to capture the full image. And a lot of what you would scan would be larger than that image. Otherwise, the scanner wouldn't be very small, or than the head of the scanner. It may be difficult to recreate the original image digitally when it is scanned in more than one pass, because you have to put the pieces back together. The image must be put back together to form a single image of the item that was scanned in. I believe that a handheld scanner or a hand scanner was used in the old Kurzweil personal reading machines that before the automatic scanner was a part of it. And I think Carrie was telling us that the Eureka Note Taker, which was very popular in Australia but didn't seem to make many inroads here, had a scanner attachment or accessory that would go into the keyboard port that you could use. I am remembering that right, correct?
Yeah, I don't actually... I know the scanner hooked into the keyboard port, and it spoke through the keyboard port at 115,200. And there was actually a line-up frame that you would put along the document and then run the scanner along the line, and you were supposed to sort of line the line-up frame with the writing and then scan it from left to right. It was awful. The wheels would start to squeak on it. I don't remember seeing the flatbed version. I do remember seeing the Robotron TR-320, which was a standalone flatbed. And it was also a croc of Robotron. So, yeah.
Yeah, my friend had a Kurzweil reader.
As well, flatbed. There was there's sort of a tall, skinny, almost computer-looking box with a speaker on the right and a big rotary volume control below it, and it had a keypad that popped up the front. And that one actually had a SCSI port on the back that hooked up to one of those Xerox flatbed things. But it also had the hand scanner. I remember I saw one, I guess it was in 1987, I think. Yeah, because the university had one. 1987, they had one.
My friend actually has one, so I've actually, I don't know if she still has it. It may be at her parents' home, but she had it as of a couple years ago. I remember seeing it maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, and it used to come on. It used to go do 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 do, and then it would start talking, and it was strange. Yeah, interesting device that was, and I wish I'd had more time to play with it. I also used a reading edge at school quite a bit, which integrated the flatbed in. Okay, going back to...
I remember the old Kurzweils with the flip-up rubber panel, and you would turn it on and it'd use the old-timey deck talk you hear in the Pink Floyd song.
Yep.
Yeah, those were classic. The old reading machines.
I still have a client using one of them.
Oh, wow.
Just kidding.
Just out of curiosity, anybody have any experience with the Freedom Scientific's Sarah, the scanning and reading thing that they've got out?
No, I know it's out there, but I've never seen it.
I have.
I thought it was called Pearl or something.
No, there's two. There are different things. There's actually, well, now there's three. There's Sarah Traditional, which is basically a scanner flopped on top of a very basic computer in a box with some controls on the front. And then now there's the Sarah CE, which is basically the same thing with a Pearl camera. Then there's the Pearl camera, which just hooks up to your PC via USB and has to work with OpenBook, but it's very, it's, you know, a camera, so it's quite instant at taking your picture. I have to say that I'm not a big fan of them, but I love it. I mean, it's maybe not as versatile for adjusting it, but for 99.9% of the things I scan, books, mail, various things, it's very quick and it works nicely.
Okay. We're going to move on to, I think he's talking about the Pearl.
Actually quite hard to hear. Can you sort of lean closer to your screen if possible, or is that going to do horrible things that your chiropractor will have to fix?
No, but I don't know how much closer I can get. I'm basically right
You're
there.
Good now.
That's better.
The microphone's usually at the top of the screen in the middle, I think, unless you've got something unusual.
This is an Acer one. I don't feel a little tiny hole, but the webcam's up at the top. I don't know where it is. I'll poke
it. Yeah, the microphone will be near the webcam, probably. Yeah, you're finding it. Yeah, you're finding it.
Right there.
Ah, yeah, it is right there. Okay, we're going to talk about drum scanners next. Drum scanners produce high-quality images. These used to be more common. They're still used in archiving things like photographs and paintings in museums, but are now being replaced by flatbed scanners, which are cheaper and of similar quality. To scan an image using a drum scanner, you attach the image to a revolving drum or load it into a supporting canister. The drum is rotated at high speed across optical scanners. The optical scanners move slowly across the drum surface until the entire image is captured. The captured image is then reproduced by the computer as a digital image file. There are videos of these on YouTube, but the one I saw was quite long and involved because he had to actually calibrate it and do all kinds of things. And I think that the person may have done more than one part. It was a pretty high-pitched and ouchy sound when I did hear it, though. But I didn't have time to actually edit that for you and put it on here. When you purchase a scanner, installation information such as a quick start or manual will usually come with it. Additionally, a CD containing drivers, manuals, and other scanning software should also be included. These can be downloaded from the manufacturer's website, and this is the best place to find the latest drivers and other information as we've discussed with printers. So, this manufacturer's website is where you go, and that is testable. The first thing you want to do when you get your scanner is read the manual that comes in the box with the scanner or on the CD. If you have a sighted person available, you may want to have them go through the quick start because they can actually then look at the pictures and see how it's supposed to go. Some of these are very illustrative. Unpack the scanner from its box. Take an inventory of the box contents and make sure everything is included that should be. If this is a flatbed scanner, remove any tape holding the scanner closed. Also, before turning the scanner on for the first time, you must unlock the shipping lock. This is a mechanism in flatbed scanners that keeps the light bar from moving during shipping, or the platen sometimes it's called. If you turn the scanner on without undoing this lock, you can cause serious damage, and you'll usually get a lovely grinding sound, and you'll be like, oh crap, and you'll turn it off, and hopefully you've done it quickly enough that you won't hurt anything. The location of this lock is different from scanner to scanner, so consult the quick start information that came with the scanner, and it will tell you how to undo this. Sometimes it is on the bottom. I've also seen it as a slidey thing on the back. On the 1640 that I have on my right, it's a knob that you turn, and you have to use a quarter. There's a little groove you put in and turn it. If you can't actually do it with your fingers, you stick a coin in and turn it to the left, I believe, and then it unlocks it. And I did that when I moved it. I forgot to unlock it, and it made lovely sounds, and I said, oh dear, and turned it off and fixed it.
Usually I some find scanners most software tells you change the lock on your scanner and restart, and then sometimes you have to restart the computer. It won't even let you scan until you restart the system or reconnect the scanner.
Yeah, it may do. It may tell you, but then again, it might not.
Yeah, mine didn't. Also, be aware, some of them on the bottom, they're quite easy to move across accidentally. I did that once.
Yeah. With the portable ones, it would be particularly easy to do that. Some scanners receive power from an electrical outlet. Others obtain power directly from the USB or FireWire interface. Interfaces for scanners are USB, FireWire, Ethernet, usually in the case of an all-in-one devices, parallel, or SCSI for some older scanners. Like Carrie had mentioned, my dad had one of those really awful parallel scanners that we were speaking about earlier. Okay, let me make this go away real quick. Shut up the iPod, it's saying it's low. Yes, I know. Connect the appropriate power and data cables. If your scanner does take power from the USB port or FireWire port, be aware that that's going to drain your battery quite a bit in some cases. So make sure that your adapter is on hand if you're going to do a lot of this, because they have to power the motor and the lights and all that stuff. Before installing the driver for the scanner, follow the directions in the manual or other material on setup that came with the scanner. Okay? Manufacturers are usually very specific about how the driver should be installed, and in particular when to connect the scanner and turn it on, either before the installation begins or during the installation when prompted. So you got to be careful. This goes for printer drivers installation as well. Follow these directions that they give you. They've given them to you for a reason, and if you don't follow them, then it may not work the way that it should. After you have connected and started the scanner, the computer operating system might be able to discover the scanner through the PNP process. Some people call it either one. It's actually plug and play, but sometimes we do the other. That actually wasn't intentional the first time. If the scanner is discovered, the operating system might automatically install a driver. Whether this is what you want to happen or not will depend on the instructions given by the manufacturer of the device. After the scanner has been set up, install the driver that came with the scanner or download one from the maker's website and use it. And this is usually more current than what's going to be than the operating system driver that might be installed. And it may also be more current than the CD because you don't know how long that's been in the box. It may the new driver may offer more functionality or just work better. If you do choose to install drivers from the maker's site, follow any instructions provided to install the drivers you need after making sure they are the correct ones. Save the directions somewhere on your computer where you can refer to them later. Some scanner software automatically downloads and installs updated software, drivers, or firmware. Follow the directions provided by the update utility to install these files. And this section has the lab on installing an all-in-one device and finding documentation for it. There's nothing you have to turn in, but if you'd like to at least read about it, or if you have an all-in-one you'd like to install, or you might just keep this lab around in case you do have to do one, because it is gives you a fairly good general overview into how to do it. Any questions? Okie dokie, I'm going to keep right on going. Scanners have their own configuration settings and defaults for these settings that are unique to the device, just like printers can be configured. A scanner might come with a basic graphics editing software package for editing photographs and other images. Editing software packages might include OCR software that allows text in a scanned image to be manipulated as text. Sometimes it might be a not as fully featured, but you may be able to get discounts on the full product if you can call them and say, hey, I have this limited edition of OmniPage whatever, and they say, oh, okay, well, that came with your scanner, so we'll take some money off of the price. So be aware of that. That may give you a price break. It may also give you an idea of whether the program is accessible and whether you should even bother it in the first place. Some possible configuration options include the following: color, grayscale, or black and white scanning, one-touch scanning into your choice of software, quality and resolution choices, sheet feeders, if it's on there, when should it be used. Color calibration between devices is important so that you see the true representations of color. To calibrate a scanner, scan a graphic that contains specific colors. A calibration application installed on the computer compares the output of the scanner against the known colors of the sample graphic on the display. The software adjusts the color of the scanner accordingly. When your scanner, monitor, and printer treat the same colors in the same way, the image you print matches the image that you scan. While this might not seem important to us as blind people, your customer may find it very important, and you need to know how it to know that that is an option and how it works. Printers and scanners have many moving parts that can wear out over time or through extended use. They must be maintained regularly to operate correctly. So we're going to talk about preventive maintenance here. Most parts can be affected by dust and other air particles. Clean printers and scanners regularly to avoid downtime, loss of productivity, and high repair costs. Maintenance for printers. Printers have many moving parts and require a higher level of maintenance than most other electronic devices. Impurities are produced by the printer and collect on the internal components. Over time, if the impurities are not removed, the printer can malfunction. The maintenance schedule for a printer can be found in the manual or on the manufacturer's website. Caution: be sure to unplug the printer from the electrical source before beginning any type of maintenance. Standard practice, guys. If you're going to clean it, unplug it, because you don't want to get zapped. This is especially true for laser printers. These can be quite dangerous if the voltages are not charged properly and are not discharged properly, and we've talked about that earlier. Most printers come with printer monitoring and diagnostic software from the manufacturer that can help you maintain the printer. That's a mouthful. Observe the guidelines from the manufacturer for cleaning and the following printer and scanner components: printer roller surfaces, printer and scanner paper handling mechanisms. The type and quality of paper and ink used can affect the life of the printer. Paper selection: high quality paper can help to ensure that the printer operates efficiently and for a long time. Many types of printer paper are available, including inkjet and laser paper specifically for those printers. The printer manufacturer might recommend the type of paper to use for the best results. Some papers, especially photo paper and transparencies, have a right and a wrong side. Letterhead as well can have a right and wrong side. Load the paper according to the manufacturer's instructions. And if you're gonna print on envelopes or letterhead, get sighted help to determine how that should be inserted into your printer. I tend to forget how the envelopes go in, and as many times as I've seen my dad do it, I can never remember. My printer actually has a little thing above the main tray where you put your envelopes, and they're little things that you slide up to the sides of the envelope, and it helps it go through. Make sure you know how those are going to be doing if you're going to be printing them, because that can be a problem. Ink selection: the manufacturer recommends the brand and type of ink to use. If the wrong type of ink is installed, The printer might not work, or the printer quality print quality might deteriorate. You should avoid refilling the ink cartridges because the ink can leak. You really don't want that. If you do need to, there are places that you can actually have printer cartridges recycled, or you can recycle them when you buy new ones. That may save you some money, but just don't try and refill them. There are kits, but boy, it can get nasty. And you just don't want to deal with the mess. Moving on to scanners. The scanner surfaces should be kept clean. If the glass becomes dirty, consult the manufacturer's user manual for cleaning recommendations. To prevent liquid from leaking into the scanner case, do not spray glass cleaner directly on the device. Dampen a cloth with the cleaner and then apply the cleaner gently to the glass. And you've unplugged it first, right? Yeah, because we already mentioned that. If the inside of the glass becomes dirty, check the manual for instructions on how to open the unit or remove the glass from the scanner if this is possible. If it is, thoroughly clean both sides of the glass and replace the glass as it was originally set in the scanner. And obviously, because it's glass, you want to be careful. When the scanner is not in use, keep the lid closed. Put handheld scanners in a safe place. Also, never lay anything heavy on the scanner because you can damage the casing or the internal parts. So be careful what you set on top of them. Okay, we're just going to talk really quickly about some general troubleshooting. We're not going to talk about the process because you guys hopefully know that by now, but they have some general troubleshooting tips, and then we will move on to the quiz. Keep in mind that with printer and scanner problems, a technician must be able to determine if the problem exists with the device, the cable connections, or the computer that is attached to. So you have to be able to determine if this is where the problem actually is. Okay. Does anyone need to go over the troubleshooting steps, or do we all feel comfortable with those? I'm hoping we all feel comfortable with them, because honestly, I don't really want to go through them.
Yep.
I will caution people that you really need to read 7.6.2, I believe it is, which is the one that gives lists of common printer problems and their solutions. These are testable, and if you don't read this because you think, oh, I know troubleshooting. Yeah, that's interesting. Are we timing how long the lecture goes, or what are we doing? Or is that something else?
That's for kids.
It was 46, and it said 14 minutes to go. I'm like, yeah, oh, somebody's a clock watcher.
It was quite. Yeah,
yeah, I can't wait to this funny. Class.
I'm waiting for Sean to hurry up and finish. Yeah, that's it.
That's what it seemed like, honestly. I need to figure out.
No, I like his lectures because he puts sounds in his. He picks some good stuff. I like him.
What is going on over there? What is going on over there? Okay, I need to pull up the quiz on my computer because I thought I put it up on the note taker and I haven't. So give me just a moment to do that. I'm hoping my JAWS is not coming through because that could be a bit of a problem.
No, it's fine.
I could have sworn I did this. But let me find it.
Your JAWS is not coming through, Sean.
Okay, that's fantastic. All right, here we go with our quiz. So everybody should be in their chat windows and ready to go, and I'm going to minimize the Ventrilo window so that I don't get Ventrilo. I hope I'm in chat. Can somebody look for me? Because that would be bad if I wasn't in chat. Thanks.
Crisis.
I don't see you in chat either, Sean.
All right, let's fix
that. No, you aren't, Sean.
Thank you. All right, now I'm in chat.
No.
And Grace is now too, apparently.
Okay, cool. Well, she doesn't necessarily have to be, because it's not her lecture, but okay. First question, number one. Which technology is used by dot matrix printers? Is it A, digital drop, B, electrostatic spray, C, electrophotographic, D, ink melting, E, impact? Answer now. If you have answered E for impact, you are correct. Because they're loud, because they bang stuff into the ink ribbon in the paper.
Does that mean if you're printing on thick cardboard with a dot matrix, it's deep impact?
Braille embossers use deep impact. That's awesome. I like that. That's wrong, but it's cool. Which phase of the laser printing process includes applying toner to the latent image? A, cleaning, B, conditioning, C, developing, D, fusing, E, transferring, F, writing. Choose now. No, the answer is actually C, because the image is on the drum, but we have to develop it by putting the toner, attracting it to the drum. This isn't as testable as it used to be, but if you would like to have a look anyway, well, it's probably still on your final, but it's in there if you need to take a look back at it. But those can be awfully confusing. Number three. What are three disadvantages of impact printers? So this is going to be a yes or no. We're supposed to choose three. How about expensive consumables? No, inexpensive consumables is not a disadvantage, or expensive consumables is not a disadvantage of impact printers. Okay. I'm just trying to get things out of my way. What's another one? There's another one. High power consumption. Is that a disadvantage of an impact printer? No, that is not a disadvantage of these guys. How about limited color capability? Absolutely, because there's only so much you can do. How about noisy printing? Absolutely. Wow, sometimes we get Mary in stereo and a whole bunch of her. Yeah, that's correct. Noisy printing is a disadvantage. And how about slow printing? Absolutely. Characters per second, you got, instead of pages per minute. So yeah, quite a bit slower. Which type, number four, which type of printer melts ink and sprays it through a nozzle onto a drum to transfer the image? A, fusion ink, B, impact, C, inkjet, D, laser, E, solid ink, F, thermal. Answer now. No, if we're talking about melting ink, it's a solid ink printer, because it's a solid stick of ink, we get it hot, and we melt it, and then we spray it onto the page. Inkjets don't melt ink. Solid ink printers also take a long time to get going, because they're actually melting things. Number five. Which type of printing process uses solid sheets of ink that change directly to a gas when the print head heats the ink? A, dye sublimation, B, impact, C, inkjet, D, laser, E, solid ink, or F, thermal? Choose now. Dye sublimation is A, and that is the correct answer. Thermal does use heat, but there's no changing of states of ink involved. Six, which peripheral is used to convert paper documents into electronic files? Is it an A, digital reader, B, printer, C, projector, D, scanner? Choose now. Yes, it is a scanner. Okay. This picture displays a relatively large desktop device. So a customer purchased this relatively large desktop device and scanner and discovers that it is limited to converting hard copy data into electronic images. Which type of scanner has the customer purchased? I really don't like this question. But here are the answers. A. All-in-one. B. Flatbed. C. Handheld. D. Laser. Choose now. The answer they're looking for is a flatbed. A flatbed is oftentimes a little bigger than an all-in-one. Like I said, really don't like that question. They had a different question last time that was a lot better.
It can't be an all-in-one because it only scans, and a handheld
would
be small.
That's all it does.
So.
Yeah, if it's limited to doing that, because an all-in-one could do a lot more, you're right. 8. How is the speed of a laser printer measured? A. Dots per minute. B. Pages per minute. C. Pixels per second. D. Pages per second. E. Pages per week. I'm sorry, I have to chuckle there. Answer now. Pages per minute is right. Pages per week might be someone on a slate and stylus. I don't know. But yeah, pages per minute is the right answer. 9. What is the advantage of a network printer over a local printer? A. A network printer is cheaper to purchase. B. It has higher resolutions. C. It is used by multiple people. D. It is easier to install and takes less time to configure. Choose now. Yes, the answer is C. It is used by multiple people. Exactly! I was going to say that.
Especially when you're trying to do it with a Mac.
Yes! Absolutely. Number 10. A student on a Windows XP computer sent a print job to a newly installed printer that is connected to a home computer. However, the print job fails. Which tool can be used to verify the configuration of the port that the printer is on? A. Device Manager. B. System Control Panel. C. Add Hardware Wizard. D. The Ports tab of Printer Properties. Choose now. The answer is D, because there is a Ports tab in there that's going to talk about the ports. And this is if we're talking, I think this is if we're talking about emulating a parallel port for a printer that doesn't actually have one. Device Manager will tell you that the printer is hooked up, but it won't give you any information about port settings because that's a driver function. That's a tough question. But if you ever need to play with it, that's where it's going to be.
Here's one of those two cases I think they're wrong, because you can adjust sometimes modes in the properties of a port, like parallel port sort of thing. Not really, he's not looking to do with them, but if you actually have a parallel port, the last thing is you can go into the device properties and play with speed things on the lava card and stuff in particular.
Gary, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think it depends on the printer driver. I agree with you, Brian, in principle that there are some drivers where you can adjust the properties inside the device mangler, but they are the exception rather than the rule. And generally speaking, Microsoft would prefer that you did it the other way. So technically you are correct, but Cisco is also correct on the Microsoft way of doing it. Since when did printer manufacturers write drivers the Microsoft way? I agree entirely.
And that, folks, is the end of your quizzes. Tough quiz, I know. I know that there is someone who's taken the printer exam and done fairly well. So it is tricky, but it is doable. And remember that if you do not do as well on an exam as you would like, or you would like clarification on questions and stuff that you that you're not sure about, please talk to one of us, and we are more than happy to go over your exams with you. Grace and I did that just about every exam when I was a student, and I kind of jokingly think that that's how I got to realize that Grace and I think similarly, because we would chat after that. But we will definitely go over exams with you, and now I actually know how to do it on the site, so yay.
Yeah. Anyway, what you guys need to do this week, if you haven't already, is do your Chapter 7 quiz, if that's something you're ready to do, and read Module 8, because we're getting into it next week, and that is a heavy, but pretty awesome
There's
little networking module.
It's huge. By the way, I'm trying still to get a glossary done of all the abbreviations and rubbish in there. I've done at least a large portion of it, so if anyone wants that, and yeah, as I say, I'm going to try and get more done, certainly before next lecture, so if anyone wants that, it's just sort of a list, let me know.
Or you can send it to the instructors, and anyone can get in touch with the instructors and let them know, and we will pass it on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be a good way to go about that as well.
Then you won't have to be spammed.
I
we will.